Welcome back to another episode of the Real Talk on Women's Health Podcast. Season 3 is in full swing, and I'm so excited to be joined by Allison Nicholson today, the Injury Prevention Coordinator at Essentia St. Mary's Medical Center. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to talk a lot about injury prevention when it comes to car seat safety and helmets and everything. So let's just kick things off with something I see all the time. I have a lot of friends and family with kids: car seat safety. So are there any new laws in car seat safety that parents should be aware of right now?
Yes, there really is. August 1st in Minnesota, we changed all of our laws. So we kind of went from a law that was not very specific at all, and now we have a very specific law. So I can't actually go over them if you would like me to.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So I think the parents need to be aware that our ages that are mentioned in our law are 2, 4, 9, and 13. But within that law, it talks about your child needing to outgrow the stages within that law. So take, for example, your child now in Minnesota needs to be rear facing until 2 years old. But in order to forward face, you need to outgrow your car seat's weight or height. So take, for example, on the side of your seat, you have stickers that say, my child can rear face until, say, 40 pounds if your car seat says. When your child is 40 pounds, or if it says 50 inches or 40 inches on the side, whichever comes first, at that point, your child can then forward face. When your child is forward facing and their harness, that means their seatbelt within their car seat, says that they can be in that seatbelt till 65 pounds or say 50 inches, whichever comes first, height or weight, then they can come out of that harness if they are at least 4 years old. So there's that 2 and that 4 age. Now, when your child is in a booster seat, the age of 9, they have to reach the age of 9 years old. And then in order to be in a seatbelt, they need to pass a 5-step test. And I can kind of go over what that means. And then the law also specifies a child cannot be in the front seat of a vehicle until they are 13. So we went from a not very specific law to now a very specific law.
Yeah, I was reading about those laws, and the way you broke it down was really nice, because you're right. Like, this is a new thing that, you know, just happened and everything. So what are the most common mistakes parents make when it comes to installing and using car seats? I feel like I don't have kids, but there is like a way that you can do it wrong, right?
It's a great question. So both locally and nationally, when we have a car seat event, we see about 3 out of 4 car seats installed incorrectly. That doesn't mean that everything is done wrong with the car seat. So we have parents come in and say, hey, can you check my car seat? I want to see if I've done it correctly. Sometimes that means it's not tight enough. We need to get a tighter installation. Sometimes that means forward facing, they may have forgotten to use the top tether. That's something that's attached to the car seat. Sometimes they're using the lower anchor installation in the wrong position. Sometimes they're using 2 kinds of installations when they should use just one. They're using a seatbelt plus lower anchors. Honestly, it's reading your manuals to your vehicle, your manuals to your car seat. I tell you, I've been in this field for about 15 years and car seats are changing all the time. That's my first question when someone comes and asks me, can you help me with my car seat? I'm saying, can I look at your manuals? Because I need to look at them in order to know what the rule is about the specific one they're using.
And there's so many different ones too.
Tons, tons. They're always coming up with something new all the time. And it's difficult for the parent to figure out, what am I going to use in my car? My car is changing. The car seat changed. Can you give me a hand?
So once they read the manual and they get everything set up, how can they ensure that their child's car seat is properly installed and secured and that they did everything right?
Yeah, there's a lot of local events that you can attend. We offer 3 in our local area every month. There's one in Superior. There's one in Cloquet. There's one in Duluth. If you can't attend a local event, your car seat manufacturer actually posts videos on their website that go step by step through instructions of how to install them. That's a good resource. You can also reach out to Save Kids Worldwide on their website. They post videos also. And our local coalitions also have a website. If you reach out to us on our social media, we usually will answer your question.
Yeah, that makes it really easy. So we should also touch on this, because you have a newborn, you put them in a car seat, but as kids get older, they're going to need to likely transition to another type of car seat. So are there any specific guidelines or recommendations you have for transitioning a child from one type of car seat to another.
Yeah. So our law now in Minnesota is fantastic. It actually tells you when to transition. So besides the ages that I talked about, that 2, that 4, that 9, that 13, within our law, it tells you, you are going to look at the stickers on your car seat. When it says the height or the weight, whichever comes first, you're going to follow exactly what your car seat says. So if it says rear face until 40 pounds or 40 inches, whichever comes first, you do exactly what your car seat tells you to do.
That's nice, because then it's kind of laid out for you. It takes the guesswork out of it.
Exactly.
So what are some important factors to consider when choosing a car seat for the different age groups?
That's my most popular question from parents in classes. Tell me what car seat to buy. I don't know what I'm going to do. You really have to consider the age of your child, the weight of your child, the height of your child. What vehicle are you in? Is it really small? Is it really big? Because some of the car seats that are out there, when we're talking about your all-in-one car seat, they are massive. So if I have a tiny car, my massive seat is not going to fit in my tiny car. So that's a consideration. And then am I going to be able to install it correctly every time? Some seats out there are very hard to install. So I need to consider, can I do it correctly every time? Is it going to be easy for me to install? Take, for example, I had 3 children myself. I'm a grandma now, but my fine motor control and my grip is not easy anymore. So I want a car seat that's really easy to install. I want to lift up my car seat lock and I want to slam it down and have it super easy for me to install. So I pick a car seat that's simple for me.
So let's talk about another thing that I feel like is so important to get the word out on, because I always see people without helmets, kids without helmets. So let's just start by talking about why wearing a helmet is important for various activities like biking, skateboarding, skiing. I mean, like I said, when I see somebody without a helmet, especially a little kid, I just want to scream, because I'm like, that's, you know, that could end really badly.
Yeah, I feel the same as you. And when I'm riding down the road, I'm like, ooh, nice job on the helmet. I kind of look at the fit of the helmet and then I'm like, oh, can I stop and give you a helmet, please? I think there's 5 really important reasons why we should wear a helmet. We say that helmet really reduce the risk of injury and deaths, right? Our brains are the computer of our body. We can't regrow brain tissue at this time. So whether the damage is massive or small, it's permanent. When I'm teaching kids and teens about our brains, we say our brains are soft and squishy, right? They're surrounded by this fluid. It's called cerebrospinal fluid. That's probably a really big word that we don't really need to learn, but I like to say it's like a golf ball in this water floating around. And our skulls protect our brain, right? It's just an interesting dynamic that our brain has and our skull has. Our helmets actually absorb energy when we have them on and an impact in a crash. So when our brain jiggles around in this fluid and bangs up against it, your helmet takes the impact of that crash and helps you survive it better. So that's a really big reason why we wear them. Helmets are actually also realistically visible to people on the road. So that's kind of like our third reason why we'd wear them. Helmets allow extra protection from the elements like the sun, debris, rain, whatever. And as adults, we really need to be the best examples to the little people in our life, whether we're a parent or not, or an aunt or an uncle, or whoever. We just need to be wearing them because we want to protect our brains also. Just because we're older doesn't mean we don't need to protect our brain.
Yeah. So I want to go back to something that you just said. You said you get excited when you see a little kid wearing mm-hmm. a helmet, but then sometimes you want to give them a helmet because it might not be fitting right. So are there specific guidelines or standards that helmets should meet to make sure that it's properly protecting your head and your brain rather than just putting on any helmet?
Yeah, you bet. So your helmet should say it meets federal safety standards. So that is one thing that most helmets in the US when they're sold should say. Also, your helmet really should fit you nice and snug. You should have 2 fingers above your eyebrows. The strap should fit like a V or a Y around your ears. And then you shouldn't be able to fit more than 1 finger between your chin and your chin strap.
So let's say that you're on vacation or something, you don't have the perfect helmet for a kid. Is any helmet better than no helmet?
Oh, that's a great question. There are certain helmets for certain sports, of course. That would be your ideal situation. Most of the time, an all-sport helmet would be ideal for any kind of thing with wheels. If you're on vacation, go ahead and use whatever helmet is available. Right now, in our trauma center, we're seeing a major uptick in any kind of ATV, four-wheeling, kind of off-roading kind of activity, those kind of helmets are required with anyone 18 years and under. Of course, I would never say that I don't want any adult to not have a helmet on also who's doing those kinds of activities. I think those kinds of activities really need to require a helmet, and that requires a DOT helmet, something that has a higher standard than just your bike and all sport helmet. So in that situation, not every helmet would be appropriate.
Okay. And then as the injury prevention coordinator, how do you and how can we all encourage helmet use among children, but then also adults too?
You know, I think that there's a lot of things that we can compromise in life, especially with our little ones in our life. You can compromise on what you eat, what we play with, what we watch on TV, but safety is never something that we can compromise. You have to wear your seatbelt. You have to be in a booster till a certain age. You can't be in the front seat of a car until you're 13 years old, and you have to wear a helmet when we do activities that require a helmet. And that's just the way it is. And I think it needs to be that way for adults also. We want to protect ourselves. We want to live long and healthy lives, not only for our little people in our life, our coworkers, our significant others. We shouldn't compromise on our health and on our safety.
And it's such a little thing too, like these little things, wearing a helmet, wearing a seatbelt, that it's such a little sacrifice, not sacrifice, but you know what I mean? At the end of the day, it's like a little thing you can do that could change your life.
Absolutely.
So now let's talk about life jackets. I know that, you know, we're not exactly in the middle of summer season anymore, but this is Minnesota and Wisconsin. So we're always out there when we can be. So I just want to touch on life jackets quick. Why is wearing a life jacket so important for water activities, even if you're on a boat and of course swimming too?
Sure. I think that there are three myths about water that a lot of us kind of don't realize. We think that if I'm in trouble or my child is in trouble in water, I'm going to hear them. I'm going to know that they're in trouble in water because they're going to yell for me. I'm going to hear them splashing, and I'm going to know, and I'm going to be able to run to them when they are in need and they need help. And that's actually a myth. That's wrong. When someone is in trouble in water, it's usually very quiet and very silent. So drowning is usually silent. That's the first myth. The second myth is when I'm in trouble in water or my child's in trouble in water, I will have a lot of time to react to them. And that's wrong. It's a myth. Drowning is usually quick. We usually have less than a minute to react. It's very fast. And the third is if my child is in swimming lessons or has taken swimming lessons, or I feel it, I'm a really good swimmer, I'm okay in water. And that's a myth. It's wrong. Swimming lessons are an essential skill, but skill levels do vary. Case study will reveal to us that really 47% of those people that have drowned in pools ages 10 to 17 knew how to swim. So again, around water, we can't compromise. We have to be vigilant. We have to watch our children, even ourselves. If we feel uncomfortable in water, we need to wear a life jacket.
And there's so many stories in, you know, the media about, you know, accidental drownings with kids, and they just happen so fast.
So fast.
We just talked about the different types of helmets. So I'm sure there's different types of life jackets too for different water activities. So how can we choose the right one?
Yeah, there are lots of options out there. I think what you want to look for is pick a life jacket that says U.S. Coast Guard approved. Really, if it has a collar on it, if it has a zipper on it or buckles on it, those things don't matter as long as it's U.S. Coast Guard approved.
So how can we promote life jacket use and water safety awareness? Especially, I feel like when it comes to water activities, you know, sometimes people are on a boat, maybe alcohol's involved, or maybe they, you know, don't think it looks cool to wear a life jacket. So how can we encourage everybody, kids and adults, to wear a life jacket?
Yeah, it is the law under age 10 to actually have it on you. So that's not an option to not have it on you. And then after that, you need to have it near you. But anytime we mix alcohol and then water, you're just asking for an injury to happen. So really, to have it on you would be the best, your gold standard, I should say, to have it on you. And then we know for parents, it's expensive to buy a life jacket. So Safe Kids Northeast Minnesota, that's our local coalition here. We have 8 life jacket loaner boxes all over the local area. And those are life jacket boxes that have infant all the way to XXL adult life jackets in them. You can borrow a life jacket and then return it when you're done. And that's just because we know that life jackets are expensive. Go ahead and borrow one and then return it when you're done for your activities of the day. We're just encouraging people to do the safe thing. Again, comes back to that compromising. You can compromise a lot of things in your life, but I feel like safety is not one of those things to compromise.
Absolutely. So last topic I want to talk about, because this is the Real Talk on Women's Health podcast. And you know, women really often are the ones making the decisions on car seats and helmets and life jackets and everything like that. So when it comes to injury prevention for women just in general, what are some of the specific injury risks or health concerns that women should be aware of all ages?
Sure. Well, because my specialty is injury prevention, I kind of looked at our statistics, and 65% of our patient population that comes into Essentia Health's emergency department is because of a fall, and that's at any age. So fall prevention is a health concern. And as we age, our bones deteriorate, our core gets weaker. Some women suffer from osteoporosis. So aging is natural, but we want to strengthen our core and reduce our risk of falling.
And really, falls too can happen at any time, you know, just a freak accident or something like that. On that topic, how can women prevent common injuries related to physical activities or exercise? And again, for all ages as well.
When we're talking about common injuries, again, when we just addressed all these other topics, I think wearing your protective gear is super important depending on whatever physical activity you're doing. If that means wearing your correct helmet, maybe it's long sleeves and a long shirt, extra padding, a face shield, goggles, extra foot gear, or the correct foot gear. Staying hydrated is very important. An activity should never hurt. So if it causes you pain, and it can be challenging, but causing you pain should never be part of your activity. And if it does, you do need to talk to your healthcare provider about that. And also being your best advocate as a woman is super important. We need to make our yearly appointments with your healthcare professional and talk about your medications, talk about supplements. That's really important. Do your research. Ask your healthcare professional about what kind of supplements you should be taking. Check on your vision yearly. That's important. Be proactive, not be reactive. And then staying active, be consistent about your physical activity. A lot of people become dormant, and then in the wintertime especially, and then all of a sudden the spring comes, we see it's sunny out and we're super excited to get out. But if we've been dormant for a really long time, there's going to be an injury in the springtime.
Yeah, and I like what you just mentioned, because this is season 3 of the Real Talk on Women's Health podcast. And I've had doctors and professionals of all kind come in, and they all say the same thing. You have to take care of yourself. And I feel like, especially as women, you know, you're taking care of everybody else, and you can be so proactive with things, you know, of course, wearing your seatbelt and a helmet and everything, but even just taking supplements, getting your vision checked, going to the doctor. Those are super important things that could save you a hassle in the long run. So are there any specific safety tips or precautions for women in certain professions or industries? I'm sure in your job, in your role as an injury prevention coordinator, you know, some jobs that might be a little more dangerous, if you will, than others.
Nothing particular comes to mind other than, again, wearing your protective gear depending on what kind of profession you're in, and then staying as active as possible. Finding something that you find enjoyable and then getting out and doing it, or finding something new. Try something new. Motion is lotion, we say. Trying to just do something every other day or every day that would make your body move.
Yeah, because people probably don't think of like a desk job where you're just at the desk all day is dangerous, but if you're sedentary so much, that can't be good. So good to bring that up. So last but not least, how can women prioritize their own safety and well-being while playing so many roles and taking care of others?
Yeah. Again, I'm going to go back to that physical activity. It can go a long way to your health and well-being. It can also reduce your injuries. It reduces falls. It reduces injuries. You know, taking a walk, getting water workout, maybe trying Tai Chi Quan. I teach a class that is Tai Chi Quan moving for better balance. Trying something new. This year, I tried pickleball for the first time. That's a blast. Again, the more that we take care of ourselves by doing physical activity, the better we feel for ourselves, and it keeps our body in motion. And as we age, it strengthens our core, it strengthens our balance, it strengthens our coordination, our flexibility, and that reduces injury.
Yeah, so many amazing tips, and I've really enjoyed this conversation. Just even though it's basic things, it's just so important to raise awareness and just remind everybody of these things, because we're all busy, you know, so really appreciate that. I want to ask you before you go about working at Essentia St. Mary's Medical Center. I just want to mention it's a level 1 trauma center, a level 2 pediatric trauma center. How does that play into your role as an injury prevention coordinator?
Yeah, well, it's the best job I've ever had. I love it. I love my team. As a level 1 trauma center, we're required to take a peek at our data and see who comes into our hospital and address the injuries that come in. And then my education is driven to that data. So I go out into the community, and if our number one reason reason that people come in is car crashes or ATV crashes or falls, I'm required to go and educate on those key areas. If I look at the reasons why our pediatric patients come in, again, I would go out and educate on the reasons why those pediatric patients have come in. In a year, our program interacts with close to 17,000 students and families. So we have robust programming. I educate from cradle to cane and everybody in between. So it's amazing.
And it seems really localized. You know, like I had no idea that you were using that data and then going and educating. So yes, that's really cool. Well, I think that just about does it for this episode of the Real Talk on Women's Health podcast about injury prevention and injury prevention for women. Allison Nicholson, the Injury Prevention Coordinator at Ascension St. Mary's Medical Center, thank you so much for being a guest.